This show is brought to you by MTN. For your everyday moves, try this new MTN app. MTN, SA's best network.
I'm Nkosinathi Ndlovu, and this is the Tech Central Show. The show is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about their products and services, and we thank them for partnering with the show to bring you these great interviews. The Invigilator, a South African application that helps educational institutions monitor web-based assessments to prevent cheating, just secured $11 million, or 195 million rand in funding, to help the company expand internationally. Nicholas Rima is co-founder and CEO of The Invigilator. He joins me in studio now to share more information about the software and the company behind it. Nick, welcome to Tech Central Show.
Thanks, Nati. Yeah, nice to be here.
My pleasure. Could you tell us about this fundraising that you've just announced and what it means for the company?
Sure. So I think we've been one of those tech companies that's quite a strange one. We haven't been burning cash like normal tech startups. So we've been quite clever with the way that we've built the company up. So I think because of that, it didn't require us to sort of raise to continue the company and continue adding and enhancing features. Mm-hmm. It's more been about how do we bring on the right strategic partner now to take tech that we scaled unbelievably well here in Africa at home and take it further abroad. So I think it's a combination of the right strategic partner that's going to open up different doors and open up markets that we're currently not in, and then give us enough funding to enhance the solution and take it to a point where we can have proper resources on the ground. You know, we can continue to enhance and develop our AI because, you know, it's an AI game at the moment, and you need to be deploying huge resources into AI and continued improvement on that front. So I think it's a combination of this funding round on. We've been looking for a long time for the right partner to join us, understand our vision, give us enough resources in terms of capital to take this product to the next level. Hopefully not have to raise again. So it was important to get it all done now. And now we can just focus with these guys on opening up doors internationally, scaling this wonderful company and product that we've built here and worked so hard at for the last 6 years. Yes. And I think we're really excited about this next phase of the journey. Yeah.
It does sound exciting. But now you speak about this particular funding round. Could you tell me how the business has been funded so far and who this new partner that you've teamed up with is?
So, I mean, in 2020, we created this company, The Invigilator, and it was very much an opportunity that we saw where local academia was struggling with tech solutions. Mm-hmm. If solutions were being trialed or piloted, they were typically being built in the US or the UK, and they required students to have a really good device and constant internet connection. They were very expensive, and if you can remember how bad load shedding was back then, now tell students they need to be connected to the internet the whole time. So a lot of these solutions just never got off the ground. So for us, it was an idea where we looked at if we could create a solution that maybe ran offline, maybe allowed students to use it on a device that they had access to, like an entry-level smartphone, we would have something here. And that's what we did. So we created a prototype. We worked very hard during COVID, and we essentially released a prototype of Invigilator towards the end of September 2020. A handful of institutions who really had no other solution, you know, gave us a try. It was our first in into the market. It was by no means perfect. So it's quite funny. We always meet, you know, people that say, I used your product, Nick, 2020, and you're like, oof. Sorry for that.
You could see me now.
So I think, you know, that was our initial startup. It was all self-funded. So we backed ourselves, we created it. We didn't sort of, you know, build a mountain out of a molehill. It was, you know, some simple features and a very simple, you know, application that we initially launched that we built ourselves, get it to market, got some universities and some clients using the product. And about a year and a half into the journey, we had a private equity group that is, you know, operating predominantly in South Africa, a really big private equity group that approached us to say, you know, if we come in and you know, partner with you guys, where could we take this, you know, in really ramping up the tech? So we never did an official sort of funding round, if that makes sense, and a capital raise. It was more just, you know, quick conversations. What could we potentially do? You know, how much money would it take to potentially ramp us up to the next level? And that's what we did. So, you know, we didn't do a really sort of fancy go around the country trying to raise capital or anything like that. It was more, okay, this is going to make sense to bring some capital in, but we'd already built a product. We'd already built a company. So it was not raising money on the back of a PowerPoint presentation where you're having to give a huge amount of your company away. Yes. It was important to bring someone on that was going to come in and take a stake that made sense to everybody, was going to give us some money to really ramp up resources, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. And we've been head down since then, you know, with the same team building the company up. Any revenue, any profits have been reinvested back into the company, back into the tech. Obviously, in this big AI revolution, we've had to go that way, and it's been hugely exciting for us. And I mean, it's been a wonderful opportunity to really sort of jump on the back of. So we've ramped up our AI development, AI teams, making sure Invigilator is on the forefront of AI within the edtech space. Mm-hmm. And I think for the last 12 months, you know, it's got to a point now where the tech is got an international demand. But it's easier said than done just running across the world trying to sell tech, right, to the big universities and colleges that don't know who you are. So as much as it's about, you know, how do we have enough capital now to put teams on the ground, you know, have developers in country, sales teams in country, it's also about having a few soft landings and making sure that you've got some introductions that are made. In our game, it's all credibility. You know, if you're just going to rock up and say, "Hi, guys, you know, we're the Invigilator from South Africa," you know, who are you guys? Different if, you know, you've got some guys making some warm introductions about what we've done, what we're passionate about, and it just allows you to get that, you know, that little foot in the door. And once you've got that foot in the door in a new country, then so the product starts to evolve and so it starts to snowball. So I think the partner that we ended up choosing is called Troco. So yeah, I think a really sort of nice family office, not one of those major ed techs where you're just product number one of 150 and you know, you're getting presented, you know, an hour and a half into their presentation and you're just one of the products. It was something for me that it was important to be able to have a good relationship with the guys, for the guys to understand what we're trying to do and have the capacity to really assist and jump on the back of this. So, you know, we're one of a few of their edtech investments. There's a lot of synergies in some of the big sort of, you know, colleges and that they're already working with and some of the privates that they own. So a lot of it is making sense. They're CFO South African as well. So that's always nice to have another South African involved in the picture. So we've got a really good relationship, and I think nice that they understand what we've already done, you know, because if you go and speak to guys all across the world, you know, they don't know South Africa that well a lot of the time. You know, their tech is sitting there in Silicon Valley. That's kind of where they live, right? So what we think is impressive, they don't even understand, you know, what some of our universities or schools are, you know. So to have another South African that could echo, you know, what we've done here and getting tech to work at scale in Africa is no joke. And because of that, gives you a huge opportunity to scale this globally. And I think that's where the partnership just made good sense.
Let's speak a bit to the timing of you now scaling globally. They say there's the old adage, when the student is ready, the master appears. This is what this partnership seems to look like. But what advantages have you gained by building in the South African context? And how is that now laying the foundation for you to succeed internationally?
I think from a tech point of view, Africa is the best incubator in the world. So I think anyone that is looking at, that's from South Africa, from Africa, we've got such an advantage in being able to create tech here. Because I think South Africans are, I've seen, sort of entrepreneurial by spirit. You know, a lot of people are prepared to give you a go. Whereas if you look at the red tape internationally, you know, they want to know who you are, what certification, are you complying with every single law and regulation before they even look at you. Whereas here, you know, you can start working with some smaller, you know, some smaller institutions, et cetera, and immediately get feedback in terms of what your tech is going to do. And I think that's the problem in tech, is that sometimes you sort of think about this problem in your head that needs solving. And it's not the right problem. And if you go on this journey of trying to perfect that solution, you can end up spending a lot of money, wasting a lot of time. And by the time you've released it, there are three better companies that have already achieved the, you know, what you set out to achieve. So I think for me, in what we've done, and I think where we've been successful, is that we certainly didn't wait for perfection. You know, we've got a problem. We need to try and solve it. This is how we think we're going to solve it. We build the tech up. We release it. We get feedback from students, from teachers, from lecturers.
Yes.
From that feedback, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Uh-huh. Let's start adding that into our tech stack. Let's start adding those features. Let's start incorporating, you know, what students are complaining about. It's taking us too long to do X and Y. You know, the user experience is a little bit finicky. Uh-huh. Okay, let's add that in before you spend months and months and months developing a solution that you think is the right solution. I think it's important to develop a prototype before you raise any funding, any capital. Get it to market. Get people using it. Get feedback.
Mm.
Take that feedback to heart. Enhance your product and keep doing that. Yes. And I think now if you look at what we're doing, I mean, we've got just wonderful relationships within this market where if we're creating something new and we want to give it a go, you know, these institutions are so open and receptive to, yes, we'd love to see how that works. And if it doesn't work so well, we get the feedback and we improve it. But those institutions know us at our word, that if we say we're going to fix it and we're going to get it to a point that it works for them, we will do that and we will launch it and we will continue to improve it. And by doing that, it creates this wonderful product then for the rest of the world.
Yes.
So I think from an incubation point of view, we have really focused on understanding Africa, understanding our market here best, continuing to enhance our solutions, building a moat so that no other competitors could come in and steal market share.
Mm.
And once we achieved all that, only then start looking at how do we take this product further and wider. But I think we could have prematurely run across the world and we would have been chasing our tails because they want this, these guys want something else. You know, all of a sudden internet connectivity is not such a problem in America. Do we change our whole product?
So
you can end up running around in circles as opposed to really understanding your product, your problem, creating solutions that are going to work and solve all the different aspects.
Yes.
And then you've got, you know, this wonderful incubator where you're creating, trialing, getting feedback, enhancing, improving.
Yes.
You're doing it all here at home where you know the market the best.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've solved that, then you've got a product that can scale.
You ship. Talking about that feedback process, the psychology, your product is a product that, you know, it's odd. You need to sell it, but the people who need to use it don't want to use it. You know, students don't want to feel like they're being watched.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what you've gleaned into the psychology of students and how to make this work better for them?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at some of the old articles like from 2020, 2021, though, you know, some of the press was not favorable in terms of what we were trying to do, right? We were like the watchdog, you know, the owl is watching you. You know, everyone was scared of the owl and, you know, and the invigilator and... What we ended up doing is essentially giving students the ability to study what they want, where they want, and write exams at a time that's convenient to them. If you look at these old models, they would have to come from all over Africa, find some sort of accommodation here in South Africa near your exam venue, go in, write your exam, costs a lot of money, it's a lot of logistics. Now you get a rewrite, you've got to do the same process again. So what we've ended up doing is creating a platform that allows students to study wherever you want. Not just in Africa, but around the world with some of the other international universities and schools that we work with. And you don't need to travel anymore to go and do that. So if you look at a university or a school model now, in the past you would have to pay a huge amount of money for your fixed costs. So you'd have to hire your venues. You'd have all your physical staff present. You'd have to have all your papers printed. You'd then have the logistics process of the papers to and from the venue. And then from that, you'd have to get all the markers to the markers, back to the university, back to students. That's a hugely expensive process. So what Invigilator has done is that the universities or schools pay for our license fee. That is it. So now it's bringing down the cost of education. So you're seeing all these different universities and schools that are starting to open up their online platforms now to study online. It's at a reduced cost compared to the normal fix because you're no longer needing that space. Students can also now apply because there's a better chance of being accepted because now you don't run out of space. If you meet the minimum requirements, you can study at that institution. So institutions are accepting more and more students. Their revenue is going up. Fixed costs are coming down. And students now are being able to study what they want. And that's where we've changed it now. So we're no longer that watchdog that's trying to catch you out. Without the Invigilator, students can't write exams with credibility being maintained. So it takes that away. So do you want to go back into campus? Probably not.
Probably not,
because you want to now interact with the material when it's convenient. You can carry on working. You can play sports. You can... And you can get a degree. So it's important. And then from an education point of view, if you look at some of the old traditional models, you could only test students once or twice a year because that's what was economically feasible. Bringing students in is expensive. Now you've got tech, how we work is that students can use, or lecturers and teachers can use Invigor Data as many times as they want to over a 12-month basis. So we're moving to more regular interactions with the material at hand. So continuous assessment. So it's not just you got to read your notes, you write one exam at the end of the year, you pass or you fail. Now there's all kinds of assessments, little tests, MCQs, assignments that are counting for marks. So you're interacting with the material on a lot more regular basis and you develop critical thinking.
And so, as a simple example, if I as a working person compared to a student maybe who's working full-time, some student can take the test at 10 a.m. in the morning. I can take the very same test in the evening when I knock off work. It still works.
Exactly. So there are institutions that do it that way. So it's not all. So obviously it's out of our control in terms of how the university or the school sets up their tests. But our technology obviously can be used in that way. And a lot of institutions do that. So what they have is sort of pooling of questions and answers, if that makes sense. So that if you do write at 7 o'clock, you might get a different question to someone writing later on. But it's exactly that. You can open up your assessment for a 2-week period and say, right, you know, whenever suits you, you write your test. And the second that you decide, well, now's the time, then so our tech kicks in and it monitors you for the hour, 2 hours, 3 hours that you're supposed to be writing. So you maintain your academic credibility while giving students the flexibility to choose when they want to study.
Awesome. But now look, you've spoke about how AI is becoming more and more important to your business. I imagine that it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it's helping you innovate and develop your product and make it better. On the other hand, students are also using AI to facilitate their cheating. Tell me about that, that interaction.
Look, I think with AI, I mean, AI is... I mean, it's unreal what can be achieved. If we look at, you know, 5 years ago where we were playing, all of our competitors would essentially live stream students the whole time.
Yes.
And it would be a combination between some sort of flagging metrics, but actual human beings sitting in a room saying, you're behaving, you're not behaving. You get kicked out, you can carry on writing. Whereas now, if you think about where InvigorLad has gone, InvigorLad has been able to create AR models that run locally on a student's PC, meaning they don't need constant internet connection. They don't need huge amounts of data. When you misbehave, we record it because the AI agent kicks in and we only upload what the teacher of the lecture then needs to see. So it makes it very scalable in that you can roll that out, you know, very little, you know, administrative burden, very little cost to the student. So if you look at how much sort of a continuous monitored exam on a live AI aside for us, it's about 10 megs of data compared to our competitor, which is at 500 megs. So that's what AI has done for us, in that we've created clever solutions that can essentially rival what these big US or UK proctoring systems do, but do it in a way that works really well here in Africa. And because it works really well, it can obviously work really well there too. Yes. And so we've seen the demand. But I think from an AI point of view and where it's going, I mean, we've got AI detection solutions. And we do think that, you know, there are scenarios where students would still need to sit down, study, understand the work so that you can practically apply it. But it's a forever evolving, you know, task now in sort of keeping up to date with what AI solutions are out there, what students are trying to use to bypass the systems. And I don't think it's a thing anymore where we're trying to say, we want to cut out AI completely. We've got the ability in our platforms where universities and schools want to set open book assessments. And you can allow different AI platforms then to be open while you're writing your exam on Invigilator. What we're trying to make sure is that you're not copying and pasting everything, because that's not serving any purpose. So are you still interacting with the material? So rather give students the ability to use AI, or give students the theory and the AI and practically apply it to a scenario. Because AI can only do so much at this point. You know, you're probably at 85% of answering something practical. So you need that 15%. So we think that there is a combination of, you know, schools, there are scenarios where you want to make sure students are not using AI, because it is important to study. Study, apply it, do your work, and we've got the systems and the platforms to do that. But if you're now moving to more open book types, styles of assessments or assignments where you want students to incorporate AI, again, we just need to make sure it's been done in the right way, because copying and pasting directly from ChatGPT, and that's my assignment, is not making a student think about what they're doing. Interact with AI, use it in the right way, take the AI, practically apply it to the question at hand. That's your assignment. And that's been done very well through the Invigilator, and that's how we're evolving. So I think it's a double-edged sword, you're right. You know, you've got to think about, well, how do we detect the ways that AI can help students cheat? And we've got to have those safeguards in place. But we've also got to evolve our tech to say, but it's also now silly to think that AI is just banned. We mustn't use AI. Mm. In the working world post-school, we're going to be using AI. So we need to involve it into processes, but in the right way. Uh-huh. And students need to still develop critical thinking skills by applying the AI to a scenario.
Yes.
And that can be done very well through Invigilator now. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. So looking at this, I mean, there's a lot of data being transferred here. And I'm guessing that as a student, you know, if an incident occurs, I do also want access to that data. But I also want to be sure that my data, it's a video of me, I'm at my home or some kind of personal space. How are you ensuring that you are aligned with data privacy laws like POPIA?
Yeah. So look, POPIA is one thing, and then the UK GDPR is another. So we've just been through a massive exercise now with GDPR where they are very, very strict on it. So I think number one, the most important thing for Invigilator is we are collecting data, but it's data purely for invigilation. So we, you know, we're not interested in what you look like, what your home looks like. It's are you behaving or are you not behaving? That's what the Invigilator models are looking for. Once that is flagged and it's reported to an institution, that data belongs to the institution. It can never be given to someone else. So it belongs to the institution, and that institution can only use it for invigilation purposes as well. So our contracts are very strict in what data is collected for and how it can be used.
Okay.
Again, within our systems, is that the first time a student interacts with Invigilator, number one, they're provided with a training course, a live training course, where our academics tell the students exactly what the product is going to do. Secondly, when you download it for the first time, whether it's our app or whether it's our web-based solutions where you're installing it for the first time, it's going to tell you you need to give permission to do the following things, and that's your camera, that's your microphone, that's your location, again, explaining exactly what we're trying to accomplish by doing it. Once we collect all of that data, obviously it's very safely stored. And again, it cannot be provided to anyone else. It's only used for invigilation purposes. So a university can't even say, oh, well, here's my top 10 students. I'm going to use their picture from Invigilator, you know, to congratulate. It can only be used for invigilation purposes. So we are collecting it, and it's when you misbehave. That's the only data that gets flagged. And it's purely there for an academic to see, you know, are you behaving ethically? Or is there something here where you might need to then, you know, go forward for a disciplinary process? And it's very strict, and we've been strict from the beginning to make sure that we get absolute trust within the market. And I mean, working with some of the big institutions here in South Africa as well, you know, some of them are listed. So you have to really go through these rigorous checklists of your compliance. So we've taken that very seriously. And the next big step has been GDPR and making sure that your data is stored in the right location. Some locations can't even be stored anymore. You've got to store them in the right locations. It's got to have the right encryptions, the right safeguards, etc. And then most importantly, it cannot be used for anything else, because that's typically the loophole in breach is, you know, what happens if this data, exactly to your point, you know, students, where's this going to go? From an Invigilator point of view, we are absolutely clear in all of our contracts. It can only go to the institution. Or exam and vigilation processes.
All right. And then something that I think might be quite difficult is, how do you measure your success?
Yeah. So it's a difficult one, right? Because when it works really well, you catch people cheating. So So I think it's a very simple metric. Are the universities and schools signing up with us continuously?
Okay.
You know, so I think if you look at students, it's a weird scenario in Invigilator, right? Because our end user is not our client. So their experience or their rating, it's actually, you know, our feedback is more, you know, what does the client think? Because you might onboard an institution that hasn't adopted any invigilation processes in a strict way.
Yes.
Now you go and adopt Invigilator. Invigilator works perfectly, but it catches 30% of the student population cheating. Now they give them all zero. What do you think they're going to think? Are they going to say, wonderful, guys, what a great solution? Or they're going to push back? They're going to push back, right? So we've got to lean to the academics who we work with on a daily basis. Are you enjoying the tech? Is it serving its purpose? And is it allowing students to write remotely while maintaining academic credibility? That translates back to the student at the end of the day, because imagine paying all this money, studying this hard, and now your degree is not worth anything because it comes out, but everyone could cheat. Now you go to the workforce, no one's going to hire you because everyone's got this degree. So it's also our responsibility. And although not everyone sees that at first, it's extremely important to maintain that credibility. So we take that job very seriously. And I think something we're proud of is our customer retention, making sure that those institutions we have moved online, we have moved to a blended learning format, stay with us. And they keep renewing and they keep staying with Invigilator. And so the client base keeps growing. I think that's how we look at our measurement. And obviously we look at, you know, a big thing is device inclusivity. You know, how many students have successfully been able to use the invigilator? That's always been a major metric, because that's always the tough part. And I always say to people, you know, the first 4 years of the company, we were chasing our tail and solving inclusivity.
Yes.
How do you get it to work on all these devices that students use in Africa? Mm. How do you get it to work when internet connection is not constant?
Mm.
How do you get it to work when students run out of data in the middle of the assessment?
Yes.
These are things that you've got to solve, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in order to achieve inclusivity, you've got to really pay close attention to the issues. And I mean, at one point I would drive out, go and give my driver's license to students, take their device so that they didn't think I was going to steal their device. And then we would
just
come back.
It, yeah.
Exactly. We would come back and see what the problem is, plug it into developer mode, analyze the code and see, okay, but we can make this change to get it to work on that type of phone. Then we would do it. So we spent 4 years really trying to solve inclusivity.
Yes.
And I mean, now we work on 99.9% of devices and we've solved that.
Yes.
And now it's meant we've been able to turn our attention to credibility. What other features can we add? How much more data can we upload in an inclusive way?
Mm-hmm.
What other features can we do? AI detection, live AI monitoring, you know. Mm-hmm. Now we're focusing on the data set and the database and really buffing and ramping that up. So like now it's a different measure of success, because if we just had to continue measuring inclusivity, well, we've nailed it. You're going to keep nailing it now.
Yes.
But now the other metrics, because now it's like, but guys, you know, our clients will say it would be really nice to see video footage for the entire assessment. Okay, well, how do you solve that now? We need to add more video footage in an inclusive way.
Yes.
That's now, we launched that feature. Mm-hmm. How well has it worked across the market? Has it caused any problems? Has it impacted inclusivity? No, it has not. Everyone's been able to use it like they were 3 months ago.
Yes.
But now all of a sudden, there's more footage coming in from Invigilator. Tick, that's a success. So it's an evolvement. It evolves, you know, and I think that's important, because if you're going to keep measuring yourself against the same metric, well, eventually you're going to nail it.
Yes.
And then you're not going to be able to grow anymore.
Yes. So that constant change is important.
Yeah.
Let's take a zoom out now. Let's look at EdTech. Where do you see it going? What excites you at the moment?
Oh, there's so much. How long do we have? I think, you know, when we look at, you know, what we first started, I mean, a very basic mobile application, you know, to what the Invigilator does now. I think EdTech is probably, for me, one of the most exciting spaces in technology right now. It's topical. Everyone's so worried about what AI is going to do to teaching. There's so much good that can happen. And I think that, you know, we're moving into this new era where teaching was done in the same way for the last 50 plus years.
Mm.
And only now we're starting to look at, well, is this the right way, or can we start adding more practical application of theory to it? Which, again, is not easy, because if you think about a teacher, they set a paper, it's got a memo, easy to mark, right?
Yes.
Give the student the theory, practically apply it to the scenario. It means you really need to know it as a teacher to mark practically. So there's so many different, you know, resources and tech coming in, AI marking, AI paper setting. I mean, the fact that you've got a teacher in your pocket now, how crazy is that?
Yes.
I mean, you can consult with ChatGPT on any topic now. I mean, you're struggling with grade 9 maths and you know, you don't know how to do trigonometry.
Mm.
You can input where you're struggling. It can evaluate you and then come back with where you need to improve, different questions to practice.
Tailor-made education.
You know, whereas before, you know, you ask your teacher, can I have an extra lesson? Whereas now, I think everything's just so readily available. So I think education is going to continue to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And with it, the opportunities for us to continuously evolve. And I mean, we've gone from, you know, mobile applications at the start, because that was what our students had access to.
Yes.
Then some started to have laptops because we're moving more to the digital age. So we had applications within the PC.
Mm-hmm.
Then that wasn't looking so good in terms of AI. So we've evolved to web-based solutions now that can monitor students the whole time, but it can still run offline because web has now improved so much. So we are constantly evolving what we do. Then AI was a problem now with ChatGPT, so you introduce AI detection solutions and introduce solutions that students can do the assignments through to make sure they're not over-relying on AI. There is this massive bottleneck of what we've got to work on. So we keep hiring more and more developers and more team members in Invigilator, and we're just not running out of anything new to add, to build, to enhance. And I think that's the exciting bit, is that, you know, you can never be bored in this industry at this point in time, because there's always a problem to solve.
Yes.
And I mean, if you look at 2020, we had 3 clients. I mean, just in South Africa now, we're well over 100 clients now in South Africa. So that's 100 institutions, not people, institutions giving you feedback on, Nick, we saw this today. It would be really nice if Invigilator.
Yes.
Then it creates a whole new idea for us. Okay, let's go and let's build it. And we have been adamant that when institutions come back to us with, it would be nice to add this feature or can't you enhance this, we do not charge for that. If it's a solution or it's an enhancement that's going to benefit the overall user base, we do it to improve the product. Because now we get another client a week later because that feature makes sense. And because of that, we get the buy-in. We have this constant feedback, and that benefits us like you can't believe. So if you're bored today, wait till tomorrow. Something exciting will rear its head up, and we'll be building something new.
And Nick, this is, I mean, we go back to that point. This is a proudly South African product, and it's scaling all over the world. Could you just give us an overview of the markets that you're looking to penetrate?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, it's quite weird to think that, you know, you create tech for a South African or an African problem that's then got a use case in the US and UK. But I think we're quite harsh on ourselves as South Africans that think, you know, a lot of the problems that we struggle with is just South African problems. It's not. If you look internationally, you know, the tech that was out there really is for high-risk assessments, students with really good devices writing entry-level exams to universities and, like, super high stakes where you're going to be paying $100, $200 for that assessment to be proctored. That's not the market. So what we've been able to focus on is creating tech that's usable, that's scalable, where volumes can use it at the right price. Yes. And the rest of the market hasn't focused on that. We've had to, because how do you now, you know, go to a massive South African institution and tell them that they need to pay $100 per assessment? I mean, you'll get laughed out of the room. So you've got to build tech that's going to work for the South African budget. So because of that, I think now we've got to a point where when we had the mobile app was very much a South African solution because Africa and South Africa, students only had a smartphone. And that was 2020. You know, that it wasn't, you're going to be studying online, you need to think about a device to study online because we're an online institution. It was an immediate remedy to a problem, which was COVID. We can't go to campus. I need something to write on. Smartphone solution. We created a really good smartphone solution, maybe not in 2020, but, you know, we evolved it to a really good solution. If you look at the numbers that are using that product and how scalable it has been. So we created a really good solution, but it was by no means going to go into Harvard or Stanford and say, guys, we're going to move your exams onto a mobile. I mean, you're going. It's not going to. You know, so we then had to continuously evolve our tech. And once the South African market was ready to move to PC exams as well, and we were able to take schools onto PC solutions, well, then we were starting to look quite similar to what some of these US and UK institutions were doing. But we added that South African magic to it where, again, you didn't want students to be connected to the internet the whole time. You didn't want this to cost $100 for one assessment. You wanted students to be able to use it as many times as they needed to over a 12-month period and bring in clever AI, which other people weren't doing at that point. You know, other people were doing live monitoring, but human beings sitting in a room watching students. We wanted to bring in AI so that it could take all the admin off teachers and lecturers, that it could just run your assessments. At the end, you get a report. So it was very different thinking in the way that we built that. But now it's scalable for us in Australia. So we're working with a nice big institution in Australia. We've got a number of schools already in the UK that are using Invigilator. And then as you've seen with the press that's come out now, I mean, the big focus for us is the US. Because again, even though you think the US is just this first world with lots of internet, lots of device. I mean, there's hundreds of community colleges that are just looking for tech that have never been able to use tech because it's not scalable and it's not priced right. We've created all of this tech. We've built it ourselves, rolled up our sleeves, created it in a way where we're not relying on anyone piggybacking or third party. We've built everything so we can price it the way we want to price it so that more students can get access to it. And that's been, I think, where we've been successful, is that these other companies are coming in purely as a moneymaker. How much can we charge for this tech? You looked at the proctoring solutions during COVID. They ramped their prices up. Ours is a combination between how do we get more students to study and enjoy the benefit of the Invigilator, but at the same time create a sustainable business model. So we will always be more affordable than these other tech products, more cost effective. And by that way, we can obviously then scale and be used by big institutions. So I think, you know, we're already working, you know, sort of around the world in some of these countries. We've got some institutions as well that we've been working with within LATAM. But I think for now, the focus is the US, the UK, Australia, and then through Cultroco, they've got quite a lot of presence in India as well. We went and spent some time there just over a year ago to try and understand that market and where we can potentially fit in. And some of our in-venue tech is looking very interesting for India because, again, they've got a postal service that works really well. It's, again, something we don't really understand because ours hasn't worked so well for the last while. But they will post their papers all over, you know? So you're going to go in there and say, we're going to move it. You're creating a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. But if you can go in and add, you know, physical verification checks, roll call checks, things that are still being done in a manual way. Yes. You get your little foot in the door there or your little pinky in the door, and you slowly evolve institutions to using your tech further and wider. And that's where we've been good, is that we don't go in and say it's online or nothing.
Yes.
It can be an element within Vigilator where you want to just check, has students used AI, or run our plagiarism detector and see whether or not plagiarism has been detected. And then that can be the only thing you use to start off with. But then maybe there's that one assessment where you want to do it digitally. Let's get everyone right from home. And then you get exposure. Oh, this is quite cool.
Yes.
And then slowly we develop that relationship by moving that institution more and more onto our products. So I think we've focused specifically on creating a really nice moat around South Africa, Africa, and really understanding our market, taking feedback from students, feedback from teachers and lecturers, incorporating that within our product, continuing to enhance. And I think now, I mean, as I sit here, you know, as a CEO of the business, we are now ready to scale. And that's why we pulled the trigger on this deal, because we're going to be going hard into the US and the UK and Australia now.
And we wish you all the best.
Thanks,
Nick,
Nati.
Thank you so much for your insights.
No, thank you so much, Nati. Great to chat to you.
My pleasure. That is Nicholas Riemer. He is co-founder and CEO of the Invigilator. And this is Tech Central Show.